So really do the math when you're actually signing up for a retirement home and see if they can age in place there, what extra services. Then you're looking at long-term care. You're probably not getting into long-term care if you're in Ontario, unless you're in serious issue. In other parts of the country, it's a little bit less, but here in Ontario, formally, it's 43,000 people on the waiting list. It's probably more like 50 or 60,000 people on the waiting list. So you really got to be ready to live either at home or modify your own care support needs.
Hello, welcome to Strictly Money, where your finance and prosperity meet. I'm Sejal Patel. Navigating the journey of aging parents. That's what we're going to talk about today, because it also means that we have to acknowledge the circle of life. You know, when we were young, we needed their support, and the time may come where they need ours. And that's going to require essential conversations. It's going to mean that important decisions have to be made. My guest for today's show is making that process easier. Laura Tamblyn-Watts is the author of a newly released book. It's called Let's Talk About Aging Parents. She's also the CEO of CanAge, which is Canada's National Seniors Advocacy Organization. And she joins me now. Hi, Laura. Thanks so much for coming on Strictly Money.
It's always a delight.
I want to thank you. I want to thank you for writing this book. You may not know this, but my dad is 88. He has dementia. My mom is 82, in great health. And, you know, I just feel so blessed that they are alive, that I can take care of them. They are literally an 8-minute walk from where I am. But I worry, you know, I worry if I'm doing enough. I worry about the next couple of years and what could happen. And I feel like I'm on top of a lot of things, but your book really made me think about a lot more, you know. So thank you for writing it. What made you write it? Maybe tell me, what made you write it? And also write it the way you did, because you have a lot of information and you have checklists, which I personally love.
So think about the many, many books you have in pregnancy, baby years, toddler years, raising your children, your spirited children, your teenagers, and whatever. And all of that is incredibly short. If you conclude all of it, imagine you had one book from everything from pregnancy to when they leave, theoretically, you maybe get max 18 years. When we think about aging parents, and I use that term so broadly, right? Like it's short form for any older adult in your life, it could be 50 years. And when we think about our generations, of course, spreading out, we now have 6 active generations. I was helping a guy the other day. He's 95. He's actually making decisions and supporting his 72-year-old son who has dementia. That son has got kids in their late 40s. Those people have kids in their mid-20s, and those have just had babies. So there wasn't a handbook. And I wanted one that was uplifting and funny, but gave the real information in a fast and easy way that you could just open what you needed and go to it right away.
Yeah. And you cover topics that, I mean, you're not shying away from anything. I'm telling everyone you've got to read this book. And Laura, it really does start with a conversation, right? I mean, your subtitle is 27 Essential Conversations. And the fact is that for most people, that's tough. It's tough to have conversations that are sensitive around caregiving or downsizing, and do it with empathy and do it in a way that preserves your parents' dignity. And you have some strategies around that. So walk us through a couple.
I really do. So imagine, first of all, the all or nothing approaches that we often start with, right? There's going to be Susan from Calgary who, you know, eldest child comes in, tells mom and dad, you know what, we're going to sell your house. We're going to move you across the country to Calgary. We're going to put you in an apartment, like a senior's apartment. And then she like leaves the next day and everyone is blinking. How is that going to go over? Well, about as well as you'd imagine. What about this one? We're just not going to talk about it, or do what I say, or I'm not going to help you at all, which is the other thing that people do. So let's just put those to the side. So let's try again. Yeah. Okay. So what if you want to talk about, say, are you really going to be able to age in place in the house or apartment that you're living in, right? Which is a concern we start off with. There's 4 big components of the book. The first one is, where do you live and how do you stay there, or how do you be healthy in there? You can start off by saying something like, you know what? My knee's getting sticky. You know, I'm in my early 50s. That one, I think about those stairs up and down, and I just think to myself, oh, I don't know about that anymore. And I slid and fell on the ice this Christmas. And I, you know, it really took me a while to come back from, you know, do you have any advice? Like, what do you think? So one of the pieces that we often say, which by the way is completely wrong, is that we start parenting our parents. No, we don't. No, we are 16 years old and they know what's best. And that is exactly how it stays. Maybe you make it up to 18, might be down at 12, right? You don't become your parents' parents and they don't like it. Can you imagine your 12-year-old kid, niece, nephew, you know, rocking up and telling you you need to move and that also, you know, you're doing everything wrong? Ah, good luck. So ask their advice. Same with things like wills or powers of attorney. You know what? My kids are getting older. We're traveling this year. I guess I probably need to update some stuff. Dad, have you done your like wills and powers? I'd love your thoughts on this, Lee. What do you think? Oh, yeah. You know, you do have, where are they? You can say, I'd love to look at them and learn from you. Then all of a sudden, everyone's got their stuff out. Turns out your father hasn't updated his power of attorney since like, you know, 1999. And the person he's appointed died like 10 years ago, right? So these are opportunities to open up the conversation. Same with driving, which is such a difficult conversation. Oh, I hate the 401. Oh, the QBW or the highways, those bright lights that are coming at me. They just blind me. I don't even like driving on the highway and I don't like driving at the highway at night. What about you? That opens up the conversation as opposed to saying, here's what I think you should do. The other tip, ask them about their friends. They've got no problem spilling the tea on what's happening to, you know, Mr. Lee or, you know, Mrs. Stiffelmeyer or whoever it is, right? Ask them about their friends and what they're thinking and what their experiences are, what they like about that and what they don't.
I love this. You know, I just went 2 weeks ago, I took my dad to the geriatric centers. We had to get him examined. And one of the tips that they gave me is try to make it as if it's his idea. And, you know, say, remember, Dad, you know, remember, Dad, that you said you were going to go for a walk today? He's like, I did. Yeah, you did. Yeah. So we're trying a few things, Laura. We're trying it out. Because we talk about personal finance, obviously, on the show, I do want to cover it from primarily from that angle. Being able to support your parents obviously means that you have to understand what sort of financial resources you're dealing with, right? Some may have resources, some may not. The problem that I have found is that a lot of parents have never discussed money with their children. And now all of a sudden, you have to talk about it. So what's your advice? How does a caregiver broach that conversation around money?
So there's a couple, like literally I write scripts. If your parent is like this, try this approach. If your parent is like this, try this approach. So here's an example of an approach for someone who's totally avoidant. And my poor mother, I'm going to use her as an example, but she knows this, right? She doesn't like to talk about money. She's actually fine, but she doesn't like to talk about it. And she doesn't really know what things cost. She doesn't want to know what things cost. My dad loves to deal with personal finance. He does it. It causes her emotional stress and pain, right? So the idea is, well, as long as my dad takes care of it, it's fine. But God forbid something happened to my dad, as it did this past week. And so I sat down with her a couple of different times and said, you know, like, what do you want? Well, she doesn't want to be making those decisions. Okay, so now I know that she wants someone else to pay those bills and whatever else. It's not that she's not a smart person. It's just that it's not what she wants to do. So now I have the opportunity to go to my dad. Okay, I may not have had it before. Dad, you know how your back went out? Mom's getting really worried if you weren't able to do it. So she's asked me, can I go through it with you so I know where your accounts are? It's a favor to your wife, right? It's a favor. Oh, no problem. You know, I would absolutely want my mom, you know, to be taken care of, right? So an emotional way in, right? How about this? We call it the death drawer as a joke. My mom literally puts things in she doesn't want to talk about in one cabinet. It's in one cabinet. I just ask her to date it and she drops in everything you want. Now, look, it's not ideal, but at least I know where it is. How about this? The problem on vacation approach. Right? People don't necessarily want to think about it as an illness problem, but what if you're in a car accident when you're on holiday or adventuring, you know, in the Himalayas? Oh, that's a different way of thinking about things. Okay, Dad, what if I can't get a hold of you when you are in that silent meditation retreat, but something needs to happen? So that's a conversation in for either being an authorized representative, knowing how much money you have, and so on and so forth. Then when you think about it, you can always use the I read it in the news approach, or I listened to it in my favorite podcast on personal finance. Hey, did you know that having a PSW, a personal support worker, living in your house 24/7 costs probably $300,000 a year? Like, I need to figure out what we're going to do. What's your thought? Now that opens up a conversation about how much liquidity they have. Do they want to stay in the house? Can they pull money from the house? Or what is their expectation? Maybe they're like, oh, don't worry about it. We're going to move in with you. Ah, okay. So now you have to, now you've got to understand, okay, my partner might not be so thrilled with that. I may not be thrilled with that. Or alternatively, okay, actually, let's think about the house as an asset and what are we going to do with that? If we're going to live multi-generationally, let's make some decisions around that now.
Yeah, because I would say, I would think that you'd have to understand the net worth, you know, what you're dealing with in terms of net worth, because they may still have liabilities that you're not aware of, but also cash flow, like what's actually readily available. Do you think it makes sense for the parents and the caregiver to sit down together with, if they have a financial advisor? Yeah. And a lawyer.
Ironically, I'm doing that next week with my parents. Like, it's actually the very thing that we're doing. Dad, you know, excited. And this now I wrapped around tax season. Right. So part of what I would do is say, have an excuse for why you're having the conversation. That's not, if it isn't an emergency, pin it to something. You know what? I was just looking at the valuation of my house, or it's tax season, or I'm just trying to figure out my own things. Could we figure out what you're doing so we could do it maybe together? Ah, so now we're in a nice non-confrontational way. If you can go to the financial planner and listen, try to make clear you're not there to take over, but to understand. And in case of emergency, that's a great way of putting it. In case of emergency, they'll know who I am, what my face looks like. I won't be just rocking up and saying I'm taking over. These case of emergency scenarios where you make an appointment with the financial institution, the bank, getting the powers of attorney if you have them validated and so they're comfortable, all of that is good to do in a non-urgent situation if we can.
I think that's really important. I mean, I feel very fortunate that my parents have been incredibly open in pretty much all my life around their finances. So I'm usually the one who talks with the advisor, but I always include them. You know, I'm like, hey, this is what we decided. What do you think? So I get them involved. But it sounds like, Laura, to really broach the conversation, try to make it about you is what you're saying.
Use your I states, right? I mean, there's a reason why I teach actually in the Faculty of Social Work at U of T, not the Faculty of Law. Most of these problems aren't actually law problems, and lots of them aren't even finance problems, which, as you know, I really like talking about. They're people problems and they're conversational problems. Challenges. And you can't do with the, I'll do whatever you say, which is a not that common approach, but sometimes you get it. And often women are kind of programmed to come out with that, particularly older women. I'll do whatever you say because I'm used to this gender bias, but it's mostly nonsense. They probably aren't going to do whatever you say. And also you're not honoring who they are. More likely you'll get the, I don't know, I don't want to talk about it. Or, yeah, but I don't want to talk about it with you. And so that's interesting. Another way of dealing with it, sometimes if they've got like the auntie's circle, it depends, this is cultural. Sometimes they'll get together, you have tea, maybe come to that tea party or whatever it is where they're drinking chai or a cocktail or whatever is appropriate for that. And you can sort of prompt with what their kids are doing and so on. That doesn't necessarily need to mean about you, but you can try to figure out from them what's important. And then that is a nice way in because you're fixing the thing that they talked about when they were together.
I love that. Great idea. So much more to unpack, but Laura, we have to hear from our sponsors, BMO ETFs, who without I wouldn't be able to do this show. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll continue this conversation. Welcome back to Strictly Money. I'm here with Laura Tamblyn-Watts, the author of a newly released book, Let's Talk About Aging Parents, and also the CEO of CanAge. Laura, let's talk about homes and aging in homes, because most parents want to stay put where they are. And for lots of reasons, it's not necessarily cheap to move. They have established social circles, but sometimes it isn't practical. So for a caregiver, what sort of signs should they look for that maybe it is time to have that conversation about moving?
Falling is the most important thing, and maybe not what people thought I was going to say, but falling is the critical issue. The book is divided. The first whole chapter is assessing how can you age in place better. So if you look at the house, for instance, you don't necessarily need to move, right? Can you move, live on one floor? Remember that dining room that nobody has eaten in since 1997? Right? Move out the dining room table that nobody sits in, put some barn doors across, very cheap. All of a sudden, you've got an accessible bedroom with wide doors. That probably costs, I don't know, $500, right? So some of these things are actually quite easy. Get a second banister, $50, max $80. Reduces your falls going downstairs by 56%. So some of these things are cheap and easy and you can use the house in different ways. Sometimes there's revenue generation, always one of my favorite topics. What about doing something like a home share? Get a little bit of money coming in, $500, $700, $800, $1,000 coming in, graduate students living upstairs or downstairs where mom and dad can't get to anymore. And money coming in, there's someone, they're doing some exchange around the house. It's called a home share program. Mowing the lawn, walking the dog, shoveling the snow, right? So now not only are they not spending money on gardening, dog walking, shoveling snow, they're actually making income, which they can invest in some of those home improvements, right? Make sure that you're looking at your tax write-offs. Right now in Canada, $20,000 can be used, refundable tax credit off the top. And for every family member that lives in the house, an additional $10,000 can be used. So there's a bunch of tax credits. Now, if you can't live in your own home because they're wandering, they've got cognitive impairment, they can't make it in and out, what we call our activities of daily living. So they can't toilet, they're wandering, they've got cognitive impairment. We're looking at these types of things. They need some supports. You got to look at the cost of home care. It's probably pretty high. Then you're going to likely look at, are you going to do some kind of retirement home? That is kind of how long is a piece of spring. Mid 3,000s, probably at the very low end, up to 15,000 on the high end. When you look at those contracts, read them carefully. They are not easy to read. They are not consumer friendly. There's the cost, which is essentially a tenancy, 4,000, 5,000, who knows what that costs? You can see it. And then there's all these extra costs, all the services you have to pay for. So really do the math when you're actually signing up for a retirement home and see if they can age in place there, what extra services. Then you're looking at long-term care. You're probably not getting into long-term care if you're in Ontario, you know, unless you're in serious issue. In other parts of the country, it's a little bit less, but here in Ontario, formally, it's 43,000 people on the waiting list. It's probably more like 50 or 60,000 people on the waiting list. So you really got to be ready to live either at home or modify your own care support needs.
Wow. Wow. But I like the fact that you said, you know, read those contracts because it's, yeah, you got to read between the fine lines. And I often say that they'll tell you what's included. Sometimes you've got to ask the other question, what's not included, right? Kind of, you know, go the other way. Laura, you mentioned power of attorney a little bit earlier. This to me is incredibly important. Can you give us your thoughts on how to make sure it is done properly? And also, how do you make the decision on who has that power of attorney, especially when you have other siblings?
Yeah. And entire chapters in the book on that. So if you say have 8 adult children and you ask me the question, can I appoint all 8 jointly? Yeah. Should you? No. Absolutely not. So you're kind of whittling your way through. I'll use the terms about your body and about your stuff. In different jurisdictions, we call them different things. But in Ontario, it'd be a power of attorney for personal care is your body. Personal directive in other jurisdictions, representation agreement, same thing, right? You pick someone to make decisions for where you live, what you eat, how you live in the world, and also your healthcare. And then the money stuff, right? People say, oh, I don't have any property. Okay, so that's the first step. People think they don't need it because they don't own a house. No, it's all your stuff, right? Right, power of attorney for property. So the first thing you want to do is you're going to ask yourself, who's good at those things? I know that sounds obvious, but people will start off by usually saying, oh, my adult children. You're like, really? Is that the best person? Or is it actually the person who's a CPA that you know that's really good at trust accounting? Have a look in the book about all the different types of decisions these people have to make. And you'd be amazed that anyone's willing to do it. You have to do trust accounting. You've got to record everything. And if you do it wrong, you get in trouble. And, you know, so it is complicated. If you want to make sure that you do it right, please, I would love you to go to a legal professional. You do not know how much you can save in terms of time, energy, and things going wrong if you get the advice. You're not paying for the paper. You're paying for the advice. Okay. But you can do them online. And in most jurisdictions, you can use powers of attorney that you download from the government's website. It's better to have one usually than not, right? Please do not use one that the bank gives you. That is the most important thing. Banks will often say, oh, they're terrible. I don't even know how they're allowed to be done. They'll pull them out and say, well, I don't know about your power of attorney, but if you fill this in, then this person can do stuff on your account. And often it's undermining all of your other estate planning. The minute you fill out one of those banking powers of attorney, you've automatically rescinded any other previously created powers of attorney. Most people think that they are just getting access to help out on the account. It's not.
That's what I would have thought.
And no, people think, oh, how great. I just got that sorted. Quite the contrary. It only covers the things in that financial institution, nothing else. And it rescinds the other stuff. And then you may have two competing powers of attorney. It's a disaster. I'd almost rather you not have one at all.
I'm surprised they allow that then, like you said. And, you know,
I've been at war with the banking industry about this for years and keep saying, why do you give out legal documents with no training, no discussion, and the risks are so profound?
Well, it's often done by someone who's not a qualified, proper, you know, advisor.
It's done only so, by the bank teller. I know we don't call them that anymore, but it's done by the bank teller. So get your proper power of attorney that covers all your legal financial matters. And what many people don't realize, and this is really, really important, there's no default list if you get hit by a bus for your finances. There is for healthcare. So you'd be scraped off the road, taken to the hospital. Then in each jurisdiction, there's a default list. It's usually your spouse, and then it goes to your adult kids or your parents. Like, it's kind of who you think, right? It's a little bit different. You may not like who it is. It may be a bad default list for you, but there is one. In Canada, in all jurisdictions, if you get hit by that bus or have cognitive impairment, dementia, whatever it is, you do not have a substitute decision-making list. You must go get a power of attorney. Otherwise, it ends up in the hands of the public guardian trustee.
I'm sure a lot of people don't know that.
I think if you ask, you know, 1,000 people, unless you run into maybe a lawyer, like, most people don't realize. That's why it's critically important. But choosing right matters, because you are literally giving someone the right to step in your shoes and become you legally. So understanding what the job is important. Here's the other thing people don't realize necessarily. You can get a financial institution to do it, and they have to do it to the highest standards. And I actually think it's terrific to get a financial institution, the trust company. So it's, you know, ABC Trust Company as part of ABC Financial Institution. They can't charge you more than the same amount that your ne'er-do-well nephew would. It's a really good thing to think about. Now, they can't make your personal health choices, but they can take your finances. And you know ABC Financial Institution is going to last forever, so you don't have to worry about whether or not someone gets sick or dies or predeceases you or becomes incapable. A really important thing to think about.
Can I ask you this, Laura? If someone has a power of attorney, and suppose you do have a parent that has, say, dementia, when does it actually kick in?
Such an important question. Okay, there are two kinds of powers of attorney. And in Ontario, we call them a continuing power of attorney. Other parts of the country call it a enduring power of attorney. Americans call it a durable. I always joke that maybe it's on better paper or something like that. If you're in Quebec, it's called a mandat, a mandate. It's the same thing, okay? So for finances, you can have one that starts right away, the minute you sign it, okay? And then it's in effect. And so why would anyone want that? Well, remember in the pandemic and the cold, and we had to renew parking passes. I sent my lovely husband in minus 30 weather, bless his heart, to wait in line for 3 hours to renew his parking pass. And I said, take my continuing power of attorney. Here's all my other things. And you're proverbially going to do your work, then step into the shoes. I don't want to wait in line. He's like, it's not going to work. Of course it worked. But it also lets somebody else file your taxes. It also lets somebody manage your online accounts, right? So it's a helpful kind of skill set. If somebody needs access to it, if you are, for instance, on vacation, but you know that your kids can pay your bills or insurance. Okay. But it does mean that they can mess around in it as well. Financial institutions are now starting to understand that just because there is a power of attorney document doesn't mean that anyone can do anything unchecked. So if I'm still mentally capable and my husband is not trying to pay my bill, but say take out $300,000 and he's got a ticket to Rio in his other hand, they should probably call me and see if I want that to be done. Assuming I'm still mentally capable, they should check in with me. In this technological world, it's not hard. Okay. But if I get hit by that bus and I'm unconscious, he doesn't have to do anything, right? So starts right away and continues into the point of incapability. It's good to tell the financial institution or whoever it is that you're dealing with that you're now acting. They may ask for some review of the documents. That's totally appropriate. Now, here's the other thing that's important. The other kind can sleep and then spring into effect, okay? It still will probably say, you know, continuing power of attorney, but you need to read the clause. Or if you're in other jurisdictions, it'll say things like, you know, enduring power of attorney. It may just say power of attorney. You got to read it. When does it start? It often says something like upon the determination of two medical professionals or a mental capacity assessment. And that's like when you get your credit card, it's got the sticker on it and it's asleep. You have to call the number and spring it into effect. Here's the problem. Most people who are having mental capacity issues don't want to be found to be mentally incapable. And so actually having the ones that trigger, that spring, can be really hard because people are assumed mentally capable unless found otherwise. And often they don't want to actually show up and be found otherwise.
Let's talk about siblings. Because here's the thing, Laura, I know, and because I have this conversation all the time with people, typically there's one sibling that ends up having the responsibility of being the caregiver because, you know, someone, another sibling's living away or another person, you know, says, well, I'm really too busy because I have kids. And my personal belief is everyone should pitch in, but you can pitch in differently. Some can, it can be financially, it can be time, it can be, you know, something else. So your advice on the sibling who is the caregiver, how do they broach this conversation with other siblings? And what are some of the things that they can work out?
So I wrote the book so that you could actually buy 5 copies and hand them out to your siblings and say, okay, open chapter 4, let's go through it, right? So there's a way of actually auditing what you have available. And it's important to remember that the people are who they are. So if you have, you know, as I call it, sort of the unsuccessful son in the basement, you know, your brother that was a failure to launch, you may not trust them with money. You may not even trust them necessarily with healthcare stuff, but they're probably the one who's doing the driving, the grocery shopping, and the day-to-day. And so instead of devaluing that, look at what our asset mix is. But it's also a social asset mix. You know what? He could probably hang out with her 3 nights a week and watch Jeopardy. And that social interaction is really important. And it's actually as important as the other sibling from Vancouver who's going to be running the investment account. It's just you've got different skill sets. So part of what we need to do is do an audit about who's around, who's good at what things, and don't expect people to all of a sudden get a whole bunch of different skills or willingness. Let's figure out who's good at what and go from there. And there's a whole checklist that helps you work through it.
That's a great, great idea. And I love that checklist because plus you have something that you can show them. Like you said, hey, let's go through this. Okay. Last one, Laura, I want to cover. Parents, elderly parents who have a new spouse, or sometimes they meet someone, they all of a sudden are in a new relationship and you're not sure if that person has, I don't want to say the best interest in their heart, you know, but that can be the case. But sometimes they're just not necessarily capable of making certain decisions. That's a tough one because now you've got 2 people. Or maybe more, you know, making decisions. How do you get around this one?
So first of all, this is where you have to take a deep breath and remember the money is not yours. And that can be really hard because you may have all of the best intentions. You may be saying, no, you can't take your new girlfriend on that round the world cruise in first class because you're going to spend that $100,000 that we need actually for your care because you've got a degenerative nerve disease and we need to do it. This is where we have to deal a bit. I talk about the art, not the science. And let's go through a series of what ifs. The what ifs are really helpful, you know, and then have some sense about what it is that's important to that person. So, but in the end, Vegas exists for a reason. And these are what I call Vegas decisions. You know what? No one goes to Vegas to make really good life decisions. They go to Vegas for fun. And I had a 92-year-old guy who, you know, found his caregiver. There was no elder abuse in this case. And she was up for it. And he didn't really like his kids very much. And his kids were kind of successful on their own. And they went to Vegas and got married. And she was kind of that proverbial 27-year-old. And we checked in with him time and time again to make sure that, you know, do you know what you're doing? Is there undue influence in case, et cetera. And he said, you know what? No, I got like 5 more years. I want to have a lot of fun. And this is what I'm going to do. Okay. But for many people, they want to have some comfort. So let's try to see this as an opportunity to talk about estate planning if they're open to it. And a lot of ones where you have second or third marriages where each family are going to want to see, like, is there a prenup? What are we doing for estate planning? Can we put money in trust? How can we take that running around money and put it somewhere safe for their future? And you can use tax optimization as part of that. Often RIF, mandatory RIF withdrawals are a way in Canada because no one likes to pay the taxes. So we'll say things like, okay, how are we going to use this? Are we going to put it into a trust? Let's talk about family cottage. How are we going to manage it? When it comes down to it though, it's not your money. It's their money and they're allowed to make bad decisions. So part of what we just need to do is make sure that we've come at it many ways. It may not be you. It might be their accountant. It might be their advisor. It might be their friend.
I try to remind people of that too, as much as, you know, we want to say, we think we're looking out for them. At the end, it is their money. And you can just try to broach it in many different ways, and hopefully you get through.
and I guess a piece that I would offer that is, let's start not with saying, let's talk caution and doom. Let's talk about, hey, you guys are together. This is amazing. And in your back of your head, you're meaning that actually means that she's going to be the caregiver in the middle of the night and I'm not going to do it. So remember, even if you don't like the person, it probably is going to be a load off your mind to have someone there. Let's vision out. What would you like your life to be? Oh, you want to go to Boca Raton. Oh, you want to do this and the other thing. Great. Okay. Let's have that as our goal. Now, what if she or me or you gets into a car accident? What are we going to do then? Again, think about it as an emergency problem and then things that can happen in an emergency rather than confronting their own aging.
Are you looking to enhance the level of cash flow from your investments? BMO ETFs has you covered with their Covered Call ETFs. These ETFs generate cash flow from two sources, the dividend yield from the underlying securities and the premium generated from selling the call options. BMO Covered Call ETFs strike a balance between generating cash flow and participating in the growth of rising markets with their experienced portfolio management team and effective strategy with over 10 years of history. BMO ETFs is the largest covered call ETF provider in Canada, covering 13 covered call ETFs across a range of strategies across regions, countries, and sectors. Visit BMOETFs.com to learn more. Please read the ETF facts or prospectus of the BMO ETFs before investing.
Great advice, Laura. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom. But for viewers and listeners, I really do urge you to pick up this book. It's called Let's Talk About Aging Parents. It's out. Laura, where can people get it? Bookstore, Amazon?
Anywhere you buy your store. I actually have my little copy here, but to online. And you know, another thing that people are often doing is listening to it on audiobook.
Have mine. It's a wonderful, wonderful resource.
You know, having it in your audiobook is also terrific. So sometimes just listening, if you don't have the time, you're at soccer practice or driving on the highway or whatever, just the audiobook is a great way of doing it.
Ah, did you do the audiobook?
No, I didn't. A very famous Emmy award-winning actress did it. And it was funny to listen to her voicing me. She sounds much better about me than I do.
Well, wonderful stuff. Now, Laura, before I let you go, you don't know this, but I always ask my guests 3 rapid fire questions.
Do it.
Okay. What is the best financial advice you've ever received?
Hope for the best, plan for the worst.
Okay. Short and sweet, but a very good one. What is the worst financial advice you've ever received?
It would be the opposite of that. The worst financial advice I receive is crypto's great. You should invest immediately.
Boy, that got a lot of people in trouble, didn't it? Okay, last one. If you could enact a law that people had to follow that you knew would help them with their financial wellness, what would it be?
I would require all of them to go to an expert and have free advice. Like, that's the problem, is people don't have the money or the comfort in getting expert advice. So I would enact a law that they need to actually have a financial planner support them through the conversation, not necessarily sell them anything, an estate planner and so on. Everyone needs to have these conversations, and there should be a requirement that people get this advice and support. And that's what I would like, because in the end, a little bit of expertise goes a long way. And one of the ways that I tell people to get that expertise is by listening to this podcast.
Thank you very much. That's exactly why I do this show.
It is. It's really that, like, the laws aren't that bad. It's the fact that people don't have access to support, expertise, and advice. That's fundamentally the problem.
Yes, it is. And I would say there's so much information out there that people get overwhelmed because they're like, well, but my neighbor said this and my coworker said this, and I don't really know which one's right and which one's wrong. And so when you do have expert advice, that I think, you know, to your point, that are not there to sell you anything, but literally it, completely unbiased, which is why I started my business, because I knew if I remove myself from any financial institution, I can actually provide some good guidance and lead them. Like, they actually have to engage with the financial industry to be financially well. That's my message. But the problem is they don't know. They can't discern between good advice and bad advice because they don't know enough, right?
The other thing I would age in Ontario in particular is bringing in some fabulous new consumer protection legislation. I want them to actually bring it into force. The new consumer protection legislation is really very good. I'm very, very happy with it. But unless it actually gets turned on, put it into force, we're not there yet. And that's the kind of thing where we look at contracts for insurance, contracts for things like retirement homes, where there's no standard forms and there's all kinds of hidden fees. Like, having a good consumer protection legislation with really, really easy complaints management, that's what we need to have happen. And
that's a great law. And I am all for that. All for it. Laura, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Well, that does it for this show. Thank you for watching. Thank you for your emails and comments and feedback. Until next time, stay well, stay wise, and stay wealthy.